Something wrong with the pussy. Something wrong with the pussy. Something wrong with the pussy.
Hey, 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 hey. Welcome back, everybody. Top of the morning. Happy Tuesday. You're tuned in to episode 34 of Something Wrong with the Podcast. It's your boy, Julian. And then we are back with another great week of news and hip-hop media and some carryover and some updates from last week. First of which that I want to begin with is Drake dropped episode 3 of Iceman. And it feels appropriate to start right with Iceman. Get this out the way. It lasted way too long. It was severely underwhelming. But we can get into the symbolism and nitty-grittiness of it in a second here. I do want to say, I think it's smart for Drake to mess around with live streaming. I think that's a new vertical that artists in his generation are comfortable doing in a guest capacity, but not so much enduring on their own channel. Or, you know, so we see a lot of artists like Mafiathon 3 is happening right now for Kai Cenat and Latto and Ice Spice went there. And yes, they are far younger than Drake, but point is they'll go and do that. And that's good for them. It's a great look. They have fun, shake their ass, all that stuff. But then that's where it lives and dies. Drake has really taken on the responsibility and role of doing these live streams seemingly every few weeks or so to begin the rollout for this album, which is a tall order, especially because of how much work it looks like goes into these in terms of costume, set, coordinating with friends and people. We'll get into all the cameos for this last one in a second. And just the logistics of putting something like that together. And also understanding that when things are live, unpredictability can come into play. And in this case, none of this happens. There's no bad audio or glitching or anything of that matter. What I do think Drake needs to do, and his team and his people that are behind these live streams need to understand, is you're, even though you are Drake, and yes, there are 400,000 or so people a lot tuned in on these live streams, however many people, you're still battling the attention economy. And take it from myself, and I'm sure my experience echoed that of many others. I had it up on my laptop, but when he wasn't debuting a new song or if he wasn't walking into a new scene, basically what I'm saying is if you watch these live streams, you know that most of the stream is just him playing that instrumental over and over and over again. I'm on mute, and I'm like, laptop is kind of like, I'm not even really looking at it. I think Drake needs to do a better job, and his team need to do a better job of, you have these rooms, you have these sets. In this stream, I believe Drake operated in like six or so different sets, walking outside into a room, and then leaving that room, walking, going to a club, leaving that room, walking, going to another room. In those long walks where Drake is by himself and like clutching his backpack and, you know, looking over his shoulder as if there's somebody following him, we can get into that in a second. There needs to be something more stimulating. I'm not saying it has to be new music, but it can't just be that beat looping over and over and over again. Because as a watcher and a listener, it's you're just waiting for that anticipation for a verse to start or for something exciting to happen in the scene. And rather quickly, we learn none of which are going to happen. And then users can check out, become bored, tune out, even so much so to the point where something that is worthwhile and something meaningful happens, you're like, I'm just kind of over it. Like, you lost me after dragging me through the last 25 minutes, 30 minutes of you walking down a street in the dark in Paris with this instrumental playing. So just a word of advice for him and his team and his video team. Other than that, I think they're doing a decent job. Let's get into the stream. In terms of cameos, Sophia Richie, for those that are not familiar, she's the daughter of famous artist and music legend Lionel Richie. Even more important in this situation is she is married to Elliot Grange. Who is Elliot Grange? He is the son of Lucian Grange. In itself, a big deal, but let's take this even further. Elliot founded 10K Projects, which signed many of great artists. And became proof of concept for him and really a bankroll of sorts for him to take on many other endeavors. The biggest, I think, 10K projects for him was a really the stepping stone for him to show his father his worth. Elliot is only 31 years old. He's very young to be in the current position that he holds, which is the CEO of Atlantic Records. Based on the success of 10K projects, I think Atlantic was going through quite a shift. They were doing so, beginning to do so at my time when I was there. And certainly before Elliot's announcement, there were a lot of people that were... it's a tough business, and I would say unjustly laid off people that were there for 10, 15 years plus and put their life into that record label were laid off. And it's a cutthroat business, but that did clear house and make way for Elliot to bring in his team. So yes, 10K Projects became a subsidiary of Atlantic, and now Elliot is at the helm over there. Now, why does this matter? Why is it important that Sophia Richie is in a room alone with Drake, and she's just seemingly walking around pacing and like on her phone, checking her phone and just waiting for something to happen? When Drake walks into frame, they hug, they speak, and then Drake swiftly gets out of the room. I think the meaning of this could be something along the lines of, look, like, whatever Drake's standing is with UMG, Drake is letting him know, this is me having a relationship with your son and your son's wife. So the next guard of UMG, the vanguard that will eventually take the helm at some point, it seems like that's what they're shaping up to do here by letting him run Atlantic, is Drake is saying, I'm in the good graces of the next generation of the Grange empire within music. It is a flex, obviously, to have the wife of a label head over there in the stream, and also, you know, the daughter of Lionel Richie speaks for itself. But I think it's a powerful move by Drake just to put her in there as like a subtle cameo and be like, look, like, these are the people I have on call. These are the people that'll step out for me, pop out for me. And, you know, I'm sure everything with Drake is intentional. It is, you know, a little bit of a slap in the face to Lucian Grange, I would say, or to the good people at UMG, to be like, all right, like, we see you, Drake. Like, Warner is a competitor of UMG. Atlantic Records is under Warner Media, Warner Music Group, WMG. So to see him canoodling with the competitor of sorts is quite interesting. UMG does not own Warner Music. So interesting to have him play into that stream there. Something worth noting. Another thing that I wanted to point out, as Drake is walking, so he leaves that room and he goes on his little walk, Kevin Durant is there, not walking with Drake, but Drake pulls up to this door, which is a nightclub. And in the nightclub, we'll get into that scene in a second. We see a tall man in a hoodie and can't really see his face. At first, you see the little beard poke out, and I immediately was like, oh, that's KD. Sure enough, we reveal that it's Kevin Durant. Cool little cameo. Again, a matter of just, I think, showing allegiance and just being there. Drake's in Paris. Kevin, KD's probably over there having a blast for the summer. Drake said, hey, I'm doing this live stream. You want to pop in, be a little cameo? Kevin Durant has made it very clear that he's on Drake's team, loves Drake, and that's his boy. So cool to see him in that. We walk into the club. We see a lot of white people dancing. They're in France. A lot of white people dancing. Drake walks, cuts through the crowd with his backpack, still looking over his shoulder. Mind you, he's looking over his shoulder so much in this stream because he's being followed by what was presumed to be one man or one person dressed as Pinocchio, which was revealed that it's multiple, about four people dressed in the same Pinocchio outfit. We'll get to that in a minute. He cuts through the crowd in the club, gets to the DJ booth where it looks like, I believe it's Zach Bia is the person DJing in the back there. He has like a face mask, baklava on. You can't see much. Baklava. I always say baklava, like the dessert. Baklava. I don't know. He's wearing something on his face, and then a song plays and it's Yeet, and Yeet is next to Drake. Yeet is also in the stream and Yeet is rapping. It's really like high energy scene, big rap scene. And then out goes Drake from the club. Now Drake is walking, and we know it's implied that he's being followed again everywhere he goes. And there were also, I should have led with this, we'll rewind real quick. There was a scene in the opening of the stream where Drake is driving, and there's one of those like talky rap records in the beginning. It's like a snippet from a record that sounds promising, but that's it's short-lived, and then the stream carries on. So we'll pick up where I left off. So Drake leaves the club, and he's walking down the street, and then he goes into a room where there are these Pinocchio, there's a white guy, well, there's an empty chair, and he sits down, and sorry, these are this scene happened before the club. He sits down in the chair, it's a old white guy sitting across from him, and then there's like a gallery, all these people are sitting around him in like a tundra, a rotunda of sorts, and there's people in multiple levels, kind of looks like the a la the Guggenheim here in New York, the museum. And there's people just looking down at Drake. They're all staring. And then Drake just gets up in a hurry and scurries out of there. Nothing happens there. Nothing, whatever. So then we're seeing all these shots and cuts of the Pinocchio characters. One is laying in a bed of ice. One is like dancing, walking. It's just they're all doing different things. What makes this stream interesting, if anything at all, because I will get to my review of it in a second, is at the final scene of the stream, Drake is seen walking into a dead end, and the three Pinocchio characters that have been following him since episode one or two, I think two is when they introduce them, they have Drake cornered. And symbolically, up to this point, the Pinocchios and Drake the Pinocchios never caught up to Drake. There's always this concept of them chasing him and trying to get to him and reach him and like corner him. And it, by the end of episode three, the bomb reveal was that these Pinocchio things have caught up to Drake. And then that is the end of the story. Music, not music cuts. They just play that same beat, which after 3 hours, nobody wants to hear. And then that is the stream. I led with this, and I'll say it again. The pacing of these things is far too slow. They need to do something differently. You can't just loop a beat for 35 minutes in between scenes. There's not enough energy. There's not enough reveal. It's foolish to hold this, you know, potential bomb in reveal and have everybody waiting at bated breath for nothing to happen. Kai Cenat, you know, said it quite harshly, but my opinions fall in line with him. I also messaged my boy Jordan from Complex. Shout out to him. We had similar thoughts as well. Kai Cenat said, and I quote, as soon as the screen went to black, he said, quote, biggest waste of my fucking time. And he repeated that a few times. And obviously that made its rounds online. And someone with that level of status and an opinion that reaches that many ears can be damning, especially when Kai recently was asked to co-direct a music video for Drake. So it's interesting. You'd say, okay, well, this is someone that Drake is in Drake's good graces, and he just got off this stream and said it was a piece of shit. So interesting to see how Drake, if he offlines with Kai, or how, you know, Kai reacts after that, after this stream. Yeah, it didn't look good. It wasn't good. In short, what ended up being the release of this was the Somebody Who Loves Me remix, which I don't, whatever, sure. I think Cash Cobain had the verse on that for the remix, but again, these aren't records, or these aren't remixes, or the moments that people really care for Drake right now. But what do we care for Drake? I think people at this point just want the album, and the album has to hit. I think that's where we're at. So the pressure's up. The pressure's the highest it's ever been for him. And like always, I hope Drake delivers. And he has obviously the capacity to and the skill to. But I hope this isn't a case of that he's too much in his head and he's trying to project too much of a version of himself, that it gets the music itself takes a sacrifice and the messaging gets lost because he's chasing something that fans, quite frankly, I don't think care for. So much when it comes to the remnants of the beef and all that. Just put out good music, man. That's it. I've said this for a year now. Just put out great music, and then everything can go away to some extent. Some things that cannot go away but continue to find themselves in the headline. I mentioned this last episode, and they continue to come out. These Young Thug leaks got a little out of hand. So much so that he finally addressed them and apologized them. He also went on an interview, which was an incredible interview. But before we get to that, the calls, he went up on a call with Mariah the Scientist and called Glorilla ugly, among many other things that you certainly do not need to, you know, single Glorilla out or make it about her. You know, you're down bad, you're in jail, you don't need to be behind bars kicking in a girl's back for no reason. Glorilla had then tweeted and said, I know this ain't a dude, you know, tweet talking about me when you ask me what color my eyes are, insinuating that at one point Thug was trying to holler at her, which very well may be true. Point is, I mean, a lot of what Thug said is awful. I did tweet that this was his Donald Sterling moment, because the man is, you know, he's the comfort of his own cell. He can't even talk shit with his girl there. I'm not excusing anything that he said, but certainly I'm sure he didn't expect all this stuff to come out. He did go up and apologize and tweeted an apology to Mariah the Scientist, and then also seemingly behind the scenes and publicly made peace with Glorilla, which is awesome. Because Glorilla doesn't bother anybody. She seems like a very sweet person. And I'm glad that Thug went out of his way to get back in her good graces, at least to our knowledge. But Thug is in an interesting situation. Has the public turned on him? Who knows? People, I think, at this point are kind of exhausted of all these leaks and all these what you would think would be sealed court filings to finding their way on the timeline. It's certainly without a doubt done damage to his public reception, which is tough, because now he has to, I think he's tasked with winning people back, which he hasn't had to do before. It seemed like most people were defending him in this case up to this point. When you are saying a lot of damning things about women and the Atlanta hip hop scene behind people's backs, it's never a good look, especially in the hip hop community where we uphold the no cap, everybody tells the truth situation, which is obviously bullshit. But more often now, when you are talking shit, it's not on camera or on audio. So good luck to Thug digging himself out of that hole. Drop good music, man, and hopefully this is one of those situations where you just watch what you say moving forward, and this is that lesson where you understand that your words can really affect people. And I don't think he wanted to hurt Glorilla's feelings, but it sucks that these words were able to find her, but also big of him to own up to them and speak to her and get on a good terms. What else happened in music this week? I'm not going to lie. Maybe I was talking this with a friend last night. Maybe I just aged out of this stuff and I no longer give a shit. The VMAs happened last night. Who fucking cares? I don't know. Who needs to go to MTV to get their opinion on how they should feel about music? I don't know. Doechii won some hip hop one. Kendrick lost the big album of the year one, which most people seemed happy about. Like, they're the only ones that didn't bend the knee to the K-Bots and da 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 da. Congrats, MTV. And no matter what, everything is divisive. Congrats to the winners, even if you lost. I had some friends at the after parties last night that some of them sounded like a good time. Your boy was fast asleep at like 10:30 last night. So I'm just, again, when moments happen in my life where I realize I'm aging out of things. And maybe it's not even necessarily aging out things, because there's a lot of dusty old heads in there that are still popping bottles at 45, chasing girls half their age. I'm not tipping my cat to them. Yeah, you're a fucking weirdo. But what I will say is, how many bottles of Ace do you need to pop before you find somebody that you want to spend a night in with? But I will say, I mentally am just far beyond that phase of my life, which I'm happy to say. It doesn't mean I'm lame and I don't like to go out. Your boy loves to go out. I still have a good time, but I don't yearn for situations like that. I'm not going to send a text and be like, hey, can you list me, bro, or anything like that, which is, you know, I'm happy about that these days. What else happened in music? My boy Jay Beeb, shout out to my boy again, Jordan Rose. We called it when we shot our episode a few weeks ago when Swag came out. We said Bieber's in like this free flowing state. His guard's down. He just dropped an amazing piece of music. Why wouldn't he just drop again? What's stopping him? Guess what? No one's stopping him. He dropped again. Swag 2. It's another 23 records to match the 23 of the disc one. We've gotten 46 new songs from Bieber. In less than a month or a month and a half. I don't know how the timing of how far apart they were. Point is, Bieber's dropping freely and he's dropping great music. And I will say, obviously, I think he arranged Swag One with more of the standout records. I think if I were to, I was just texting a friend about this today. If I were to, now that I've heard both, I would take one or two records from Swag Two, Speed Demon being one of them, the opening song, and then maybe one other one, and swap them out for like the two songs on Swag, and then cut the Drewski skits, and then that would be like a perfect album. So yeah, shout out Bieber, bro. Like I'm super happy that he's just in this flow state and dropping. He's dropping quality music. Swag 2, I've only lived with in totality. Like, I've listened to it once straight through. It's going to be one that I'm just going to throw on shuffle. That's like walking around the city bike ride music for me. But I'm excited for him, and I'm excited to hear more from him, even though he just dropped again. Whatever. Sabrina Carpenter dropped her album, and I know what you're thinking. Yes, I'm Sabrina's target demo. Now, obviously, someone like me at my age and my look is not someone that Sabrina's making music for, but I am curious into being up to date and understanding what are the current pop stars sound like, what is their whole ethos. And Sabrina Carpenter very much interests me because she has been like chastised as this like overtly sexual. Why is she so sexual? Why can't she be? She's a former Disney girl. She should be like, you know, buttoned up. And why does she always talk about her asshole and her pussy and all that stuff? So I was like, let me look into this. And I listened to it. It's clearly not for me. I got that off the first listen. I think I maybe tapped out with like three or four songs left on the album. So I listened to most of it. I'd say about 75-80% of the album. I will say, if I was a 13-year-old girl, this album would go so hard. Like, if I just discovered what it means to have sexual feelings towards somebody, or like, say, I texted a friend, I said, this album goes crazy if you have one sexual encounter in your life. So, like, there's some songs where there's one called, like, My House or some shit where she's basically saying, like, you can come in all my doors, just not the back door. And it's not a metaphor, wink, wink. And it's like, clearly, she's talking about getting her ass fucked. It's just, and then like she says this other thing where she's like, I shouldn't be talking to this guy. We're not on the same wavelength anymore. But every time I meet up with him, I can't stop giving him head. And it's like, you think I'm like talking hyperbolic. That's literally what she says. She's not even really singing these things. She's more or less just saying them. And they are like explicit and vulgar. But it's also like, if you're an adult and if you live an adult life, these things aren't things that are like, oh my God, I can't believe she went there. It's just adult shit. In which Sabrina is, you know, an adult, a young adult. So, point is, if I was in middle school, this would sound fucking crazy. But I'm not, and I have lived many of these experiences that she's talking about. And I'm like, okay, cool. Like, she found a way to put this over a 3-chord progression in, like, a melodic, you know, guitar riff. So, congrats to her, though. I mean, she's going on tour. And there is the girl that's opening for Olivia Dean, who I really fuck with. So I'm more excited for her album, to be honest. That comes out in about, I believe, 2 weeks. Olivia Dean's fire. She's British in it. And she's got an incredible voice. She's got hella swag. A little light-skinned girl from the UK. But she, her music's dope. So check her out if you want a recommendation from that type of the music world. I would go that route for sure. U.S. Open tennis news is finally over. Your boy has consumed damn near every match this tournament. I watched a lot of tennis. I'm sad to say I didn't go. Maybe next year. That's always the case. I feel like I'm a big maybe next year guy, and then the next year comes and goes, and then it's always maybe next year. So, you know, got to break that cycle at some point. What was exciting, though, was the finals didn't really disappoint. They were a little bit predictable. I'd say the women's, Sabalenka defeated Amina Sova in straight sets, but it wasn't boring. It was very entertaining, and it was great. And their love and respect for each other was really good to see on display. I mean, Sabalenka is just a fucking demon. Once she realized the mistake that a game that Minasova had. Jesus Christ, I can't pronounce her name. Amanda had an opportunity and she folded, and Sabalenka just did not look back and just beat her in straight sets. So congrats to her. And then Alcaraz on the men's side defeated Sinner in four sets, which was, you know, exciting. Alcaraz lost one set this entire tournament. That set coming to Sinner in the final here. We've officially entered the Sincaraz era. That's what they're calling it. It seems like in every final, we're seeing these two guys. In the head-to-head matchup, Alcaraz has Sinner beat 5-2 in finals. In major finals. So he's won five majors against Sinner, which is very impressive. The other one he won, I don't remember who he beat, who he defeated in that one. But Alcaraz, I mean, this kid is 22 years old. He has six majors already. We're at the early stages of the next wave of greatness. These guys are probably going to be playing, for another 15 or so years, head-to-head, high-level, exciting tennis. And at some point, a third contender is going to step into this and stir it up. Someone will eventually get to their level of play and really make this interesting, because right now it seems like it's a two-man game. Between the two of them, flip a coin, one of them's going to win the tournament. This really does show you, though, Djokovic played Alcaraz a lot better than Sinner did, which just shows you how incredible of a player Djokovic is. Even at the dusty age of 38, he put up a hell of a fight and is still a legend. He's the most major wins of all time at 24, so he is like the legend, the guy. And remember, before that, it was Federer and Nadal that were going at it for a bit before Djokovic entered the scene. So we'll see. It's been an exciting year that ended on a great tournament. I'm really excited to see. Right now, the Australian Open is the only major open that Alcaraz has not won. So really excited to see if he can kick off the next year's majors with a win in Aussie. Football last night was super exciting. Bills, Ravens. Again, your boy went to bed early. So when I went to bed, the Ravens were up pretty convincingly. And then I woke up to go to the gym this morning and saw on Twitter a graphic that said Bills win with a photo of Josh Allen. I was like, well, this has to be a parody account. Sure enough, looked at the highlights and saw that the crazy comeback there. Yeah, I'm not even a big NFL guy, but that game felt like, you know, a playoff game, like a real, you know, high stakes game. And I'm rooting for this Bills team. I do. It's funny because I love, these are two teams that I really love and respect. I love Lamar Jackson. They have a great squad. I respect the shit out of that team. Truthfully, I'd love to see the Ravens win the Super Bowl this year, or the Bills. Honestly, the two teams that played in that game, I really want them to succeed. So wishing both those teams the best throughout the year. I'm making it a point to watch more football this year, NFL football, not just college. But yeah, guys, it's been a good week. I am going home at the end of this week for a little bit to celebrate my dad. My dad is getting inducted into yet again another Hall of Fame, guys. It's these things never end. They keep knocking on his door and he keeps getting a suit to throw on. And it's a nice reason to go home, see my family, enjoy a nice little dinner, and just celebrate. It's pretty cool to be in a space where my dad's here to, you know, relish in these moments, and also I'm there, you know, with him to get told these stories that I've heard 1,000 times, but this time not by him, by other people. It's really fun to have a lot of people come up and be like, I remember when your dad did. It's a lot of that. And it's not lost on me. And I did want to end. I don't want to get too sappy here. But the guy that really kickstarted my career and opened a door for me at Hot 97 passed away over the weekend on Sunday. I'm recording this Monday. So yesterday. Jeff Costello was battling a lot of things internally, and his body gave up on him, but he was a really, you know, from my experience, just a great guy and really opened the doors to Hot 97. He was in the video department of Hot 97, and he gave me an opportunity. And I don't think we spoke when I was there in a bit, but I don't think I ever got to say like how much that meant, or at least gave me the confidence to do this. Feel like my opinion matters in this space, or to even belong in this community of sorts. So I'm thinking of Jeff, and I know Jeff because my sister-in-law and him are very good friends, and she connected me with him when I was looking to move to New York, and that's how I got my foot in the door here. So I know that, you know, my brother and my sister-in-law are grieving as well. So yeah, just thinking about him and his friends and family over the weekend. And yeah, I hate ending on a sad note. Damn it, I hate doing that. But here we are, guys. But anyway, shout out Jeff. Love you, man. The fall's coming around the corner. We're in the cool-ish time of the year here in New York. It's a little bit of light jacket, light sweater weather. It's my favorite type of year. I always say fall is the time of year that should be our new year. It's when the earth is shedding its leaves. It's when we're seeing the physical change. Things are shedding and dying. And in a lot of other cultures, it really is the new year for a lot of other cultures. And I wish we adopted that, because January 1st is stupid. Just because it falls in line with the Gregorian calendar and we deem January to be the beginning of the year, it makes no sense. Nothing significant to like the earth as a physical being, as in a physical entity, happens in January. It just gets cold. Like, it's been cold. Nothing happens. Like, in the fall, you're seeing the earth change. It's like a snake shedding its skin. It's a new life. So it really should be this time of year. It's always sentimental this time of year. This is always the going back to school. I always think of my birthdays in November. So it's just a lot of like warm and important memories in my life. So yeah, we're ramping into fall. We're heading in there quick. And it's crazy to think we're entering another season of weather season of me surviving this podcast. We're 34 weeks in, guys. We're almost at a year. So once again, love you all. Appreciate you all for joining me on this journey every single week. And there's no love lost here for anybody that doesn't care to tune in either. Love you all, guys. Appreciate it. Peace. Nothing wrong with the pussy. Nothing wrong with the pussy.